Thank you. Please continue to stand by. Your conference will begin momentarily. We thank you for your patience. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the All-In call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, January 9th, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Felix Stump. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much, Frank, and hello, everyone. My name is Felix Stump. I'm the Deputy Project Director for the Operations Support Manager on the Ticket to Work program. And I'd like to welcome you all to the All-EN call today in January. Happy New Year. Welcome back. With me on the call today are a number of speakers, not the least of which is Darren Bates. He is our National Workforce Strategist for the Operations Support Manager. In a moment or two, I'm going to turn the call over to him, and he'll introduce a couple other speakers to talk with you today about 503 and your EN, your organization's readiness for the upcoming changes to the rules. But prior to that, before I even go over a couple quick updates, going to turn the call over to Associate Commissioner David Weaver.
Hi, everyone. My name is David Weaver. I'm the new Associate Commissioner for Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support. The office was recently created by merging two organizations, the Office of Program Development and Research and the Office of Employment Support Programs. The reasons for the merger were that we had a lot of overlap in sort of the focus of each component. On the research side, a lot of the research projects were focused on return-to-work initiatives. We the research shops focus some of their energy on a project you may be aware of, the Bond Project, where we're testing the incentives that face our DI beneficiaries. There was also a fair bit of research on the work incentives in the Social Security program. And, of course, in the Office of Employment Support, there's obviously a strong focus on efforts to help our disability beneficiaries return to work. So the agency, so there's enough similarity to bring the two shots together, and I think it gives us a real strength. Just sort of the housekeeping of how it'll work is I'm the new AC of the combined component. I have two able deputy associate commissioners, you know, Rob Taft, of course, and another deputy associate commissioner who couldn't be here today. Her name is Susan Wolski. Bob Williams is going to be a senior advisor to my boss, Mariana Lockenfora, but he'll still work closely with us on all these programs, of course. Just, I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I'll give you just the short thumbnail sketch of my biography. I started Social Security about 21 years ago. I'm an economist by training. I came up through the research shops and more recently have been in management. I'm a fan of the Social Security programs, and I really appreciate all the work you guys have done to support our programs. And I'm hoping today I can learn a little bit more where the rubber meets the road about ENs, and also I'm glad to have a presentation on the 503 regulation. So I won't take up any more time. It's good to get a chance to be part of the group today.
Thanks very much, David. And on behalf of really all of us, thank you for making the time to join us. Very quickly, I'll just kind of go over, for those of you that don't have the agenda in front of you, I'll give some couple updates from kind of like a housekeeping perspective from us at the Operations Support Manager, and then I'll turn it over to Darren Bates, who will come in and introduce you to Kevin and Susan, who will spend the bulk of the time today with you, and then we'll close with a question and answer session. The updates are just three or four. First of all, we have an upcoming training on the annual performance outcome report. The APOR, of course, is a requirement for ENs in your agreements with Social Security Administration to complete that annual performance outcome report. We will be hosting a training on Thursday, January 16th from 3 to 4, so a week from right now. That's 3 to 4 Eastern, where we're going to go over a new template for the report this year, the same information, so nothing that you've been collecting will go to waste, but you're going to be receiving the report in a new and much easier to use template. So again, that's next Thursday, January 16th. As of January 6th, we are processing IWPs that we've received up through the 3rd, and the secure portal and the IVR, the integrated voice recognition phone system, that's giving you information updated through January 1st. Of course, with the new year, we have new payment rates, which are being updated currently. You'll see all the documents on our website updated no later than January 24th. And finally, next week, this coming Tuesday, the Ticket Training Tuesdays call is going to be on the 14th at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we're going to go over the beneficiary referral CD and ways that you can use that for your marketing and outreach efforts. That's really all I have, short and sweet. And so at this time, I'd like to again introduce Darren Bates, our National Workforce Strategist.
Thank you, Felix. And good afternoon, everyone. As Felix mentioned earlier, I am the National Workforce Strategist for the Operations Support Manager for Social Security's Ticket to Work program. As many of you know, on August 27, 2013, the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs announced a final rule that makes changes to the regulations implementing Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Section 503 prohibits federal contractors and subcontractors from discriminating in employment against individuals with disabilities and requires these employers to take affirmative action to recruit, hire, promote, and retain individuals with disabilities. The final rule strengthens the affirmative action provisions to aid contractors in their efforts to recruit and hire individuals with disabilities and improve job opportunities for individuals with disabilities. The final rule also makes changes to the non-discrimination provisions of the regulations to bring them into compliance with the ADA Amendments Act of 2008. There will be two presentations today. The first presentation, entitled What Employment Networks Should Know About American Job Centers, will be given by my friend and colleague, Mr. Kevin Nickerson. Kevin is with the National Disability Institute located in Washington, D.C. Following Kevin's presentation, you will hear from Susan Webb. Susan is with ABLE, A-B-I-L, Employment Services, located in Arizona. Susan's presentation is titled Voluntary Disability Disclosure. Let's talk about today's learning objectives. During Kevin's presentation, you will learn about the public workforce development system, including the history, resources, services, and recent outcomes of American Job Centers participating in the Ticket to Work program. You'll gain valuable knowledge about why your organization and/or your employment network should partner with your local American Job Center. You will also learn helpful tips on how to contact and engage with your local American Job Center. And lastly, you will gain knowledge about how working collaboratively with your American Job Center can help you leverage the changes in Section 503 and drive your employment network performance. During Susan's presentation, you will gain knowledge and a better understanding of the new rules within Section 503 relating to voluntary disability disclosure. You will also increase your awareness of the essential components of an affirmative action plan. You will also become more aware of how employment networks fit into the outreach requirements and recommendations for federal contractors included in the new rules of Section 503. And finally, you will increase your awareness about the data requirements within Section 503 for federal contractors. Organizations and employment networks that proactively develop the strategies and build upon the information that both Kevin and Susan will offer today will most certainly expand their capacity to support federal contractor employers and the hiring efforts contained in the new rules of Section 503, as well as increase positive employment outcomes for individuals with cross disabilities, including our Ticket to Work beneficiaries. It is now my pleasure, and my distinct pleasure, actually, to introduce our first speaker, Mr. Kevin Nickerson. Kevin?
Well, thank you, Darren, and we can move right past that slide. It's always a pleasure to work with this audience and talk with my colleagues. I know I've been invested in helping Social Security beneficiaries return to work for the last 20 years, and I know there are many of you out there that have even longer experience with this audience. So we want to cover a few things today. What I hope to cover is a little bit more about the American Job Center resources available to our job seekers with disabilities, including ticket holders, partnering with your HAC, our staffing structure, things we think you should know, and some recommended next steps and resources we can provide you. And you can turn the slide. So what are these American Job Centers? Well, American Job Centers were formerly known as one-stop career centers, and they are located throughout the country. And they're an available resource for both employers and job seekers, including folks with disabilities. In fact, in New York State, it's typical that 8 to 10% of our customer base are customers who have voluntarily disclosed a disability. I'm able to provide a bit more specific information and data about New York, as I was one of the state leads for New York's Round 1 Disability Employment Initiative, which I'll be describing further. Given the volume of customers we serve here, this does represent thousands of customers with disabilities being served in our centers. And in fact, during the period of the Disability Employment Initiative grant here in New York, Round 1, which was the last 3 years, we served over 40,000 customers with disabilities within both our comparison and pilot sites, which really doesn't represent all of the sites in our state. But remember, this number only accounts for individuals who voluntarily disclose having a disability, so in reality, we've even served more folks than that because a number of our customers prefer not to disclose. And you can leave the slide right there. So what are these services that we offer? Here's a listing of some. And I'd like to talk a little bit about many of the customer-focused services that we are able to offer our job seekers, such as workshops, and some examples of those might be, and these will vary from center to center, but job search, prep, interviewing, prep workshops, basic computer skills, certainly in sites where we have employment networks, might even include SSA work incentive seminars. We also have training funds. These are known as individual training accounts or ITAs, and this is based on eligibility and, of course, availability of funding, which can also vary from center to center. We focus certainly on resume development, and we have a labor exchange system, which can help to electronically match job seekers with employers. And depending on the state, there may be even additional technology applied to this process. For example, in our state, we utilize something called SMART, or Skill Matching and Referral Technology. It might be called something different in your state, which can scan a customer's resume to match jobs they have the requisite skills to apply for, rather than simply sending leads based on the job titles they're interested in. We found this can be particularly useful for customers with disabilities who may be changing careers. On the job training funds, this is also based on availability of funding and eligibility for that, and can be a useful tool for our ticket holders and others with disabilities or employment barriers. Labor market information. We have the availability to provide customers, but also job center staff, local and targeted labor market statistics, which ultimately benefits the job placement efforts for our customers. Employer connections and much more, and I'd be remiss to not include maybe a couple more things that I think are useful for our ticket holders, and that is skills and interest assessments, and last but certainly not least, our youth programs. Okay, we can flip to the next slide. So in terms of the history, because I feel like we have to kind of understand where we've come in order to understand best how to partner with our job centers. We've had a long history here that goes back since to the Workforce Investment Act of 1998 and even prior to that. But I'm going to focus on more recent grants that we've held, had actually through USDOL, which has helped us move the needle forward, I think. And more recently was the Disability Program Navigator Initiative, which had the purpose of focusing on and developing new and ongoing partnerships that we hope to achieve seamless, comprehensive, and integrated access to services. This also did create systemic change and expanded the workforce development system's capacity to serve the needs of customers with disabilities and, of course, employers. This project ended in 2010 and went for about 7 years or so. Currently, we have the Disability Employment Initiative, which has the purpose of improving coordination and collaboration among employment and training and asset development programs carried out at a state and local level, including, of course, the Ticket to Work program. Additionally, DEI projects have worked to build effective community partnerships that leverage public and private resources to better serve individuals with disabilities, improve employment outcomes. Based on this directive, our DEI state projects have engaged in partnerships with various community partners, such as independent living centers, community rehabilitation providers, educational institutions, and banking representatives, to name just a few, in order to expand asset development strategies, leverage resources, and improve the coordination of efforts around our job center customers, and hopefully to provide a continuum of services for our ticket holders. Currently, about half of our states participate in DEI grants, and also within those states, we have randomly selected pilot sites that operate as employment networks. The reason they did that is there's a research component attached to that grant funding. There are also, just so you know, workforce development boards and centers, American Job Centers across the country, that operate successfully as employment networks and are not currently participating in DEI. And we can flip to the next slide, please. Oh, no, you're already there. You got ahead of me. In terms of partnering with AJCs, we've already discussed that knowing the history of the AJC that you're approaching is important. And also, I would say to learn more about the history of the center you plan to work with, you can easily find information about previous disability grant programs at USDOL's website, which would be www.dol.gov. There you will also find information on services the Department of Labor offers to job seekers and employers, including resources for federal contractors. Based on the background I provided, I hope you could see that the American Job Centers have had many years of experience now in serving customers with disabilities, which may help inform your conversation with local job center staff. Getting to know your Workforce Investment Board director, I believe, will greatly assist you in terms of making the first connection for your customers with disabilities. You may be thinking that contacting or getting an appointment with the board director would be difficult, but it really isn't. Contact information is generally including emails and phone numbers of the board director, the job center manager and staff are easily available for folks on their websites, the Workforce Board website. I found, and I'm sure Darren would also tell you, that board leadership and staff would be pleased to meet and speak with you. I know making that first connection with our Workforce Board director and center manager certainly helped us as I look back and consider the beginnings of our partnership with our local center, which eventually led to locating staff, a staff member here from our community, one of our community rehabilitation agencies. So to help prepare for the meeting, I've listed a few bulleted items for your consideration on this slide. And I believe if it hasn't been mentioned, depending on how it looks on your screen, you may have to scroll this down to see it all. On the right, there's a scroll bar there. So knowing if they've been involved with previous grants, we already discussed that and how you can research that. And if they were, what kind of results did they have? Is there a way to discover that? Generally, sites, centers will have information about even some of their previous work on their local sites, so you'd have to kind of research that. Understanding your Workforce Investment Board director and his or her position on disability employment, well, you can't do that until you meet with this person, but I know after a meeting or two, I learned a lot about my local director. Knowing what you bring to the table. For example, if you're a private EN, perhaps you could share the kinds of resources your agency offers that would support job seekers with disabilities, including ticket holders. I'm sure some of you on today's call have, within your organization, certified work incentive coordinators or work incentive planners certified in other ways that can provide accurate information to ticket holders in order to make informed decisions about work and benefits. I'm sure this service, which we know is critical to the success of ticket holders, would be of interest to your local job center, especially in cases where they're operating as ENs and may not have this kind of expertise in-house. Also, make sure your expectations are clear. I think this goes with any meeting, but know who will be doing what and when, and if at all possible, plan follow-up meetings. Lastly, knowing if they're an EN would inform the kind of discussion you'd have, of course, and that would be easy for you to sort out when you do your homework. Next slide, please. As far as the staffing structure of our centers, in terms of what will help job seekers, across the country there will be variation in our centers in both job titles, available funding for training, again, and how positions, staff positions are developed. But I wanted to share with you some of the similarities I think you'll find across centers, one of which would be employment counselors. This person is able to administer assessments, which is often helpful for ticket holders who might need to be considering other careers. Additionally, they can assist with the coordination of services within the center and in interview and resume prep. Often these folks are involved in something under DEI we call IRTs, or integrated resource teams, where we coordinate resources, multiple resources around one customer's need. I can tell you in my local office, I have relied greatly on our employment counselor, who's helped guide and assist with job placement efforts for our ticket customers. Additionally, and similarly, you'll find WIA case managers who will oversee services for customers who might need intensive case management services and or short-term training, in other words, those ITAs. This case manager may also identify folks who would benefit from on-the-job training, also an excellent resource for individuals with disabilities. At the end, I'll give you links so that you can research that further. Other staffing positions that would benefit our job seekers might be or targeted populations that you would find similarly in our centers would be vet reps, folks working under the older worker program, and, of course, our disability resource coordinators, which would be found in states operating DEI grants. Next slide, please. In terms of our staff that assist employers, and, of course, for purposes of today's call, this person is going to be important. AJCs offer many services for employers through our business service reps or teams in some cases. The BSR is the primary point of contact for businesses and can assist in many ways, including providing links between ENs and the business community. BSRs will have the established relationship with employers who hold federal contracts and may be in a position to provide information about the new Section 503 utilization goals to employers. You too may be in a position to assist your job center by providing insight to the BSR about Section 503 and access to diverse job seekers you're working with through your ticket program. So I see this as a potential for creating opportunity for you and your center and job seekers and helping to fulfill the employment needs of your local federal contractors. So in looking at some of those tasks, they do a number of things. One might be to explain the benefit of our job bank to employers, one of our basic services we can offer them, serving as an HR liaison, maybe looking at their employment application reviews and so forth. They certainly do a lot of outreach to the business sector and provide information, which is very useful when new pieces like this come along, such as WOTC, tax credits, and so forth. They promote on-the-job training opportunities, arrange job fairs, aid employers in writing position descriptions, job retention issues, and linkages to targeted programs. And there's just a couple listed. REXO, by the way, stands for Reintegration of Ex-Offenders. Next slide, please. And before I move to that, and you can stay there, but, you know, while I do recommend that, you know, you first establish a meeting with your job center manager or workforce investment board director, the BSR is obviously going to be an important person to know in terms of local business trends and connections to those federal contractor employment openings. So in order to provide some perspective, including, I hope, demonstrating to you the capacity of job centers to serve and assist job seekers with disabilities and our ticket beneficiaries, I thought I'd share a few slides that will highlight some of the progress workforce ENs have had over the last few years. By showing you outcomes of two of our DEI state projects, and one will be New York, which I've already mentioned a little bit, and one will be Iowa. In these examples, understand that the sites highlighted are a mixed group. Some EN sites had established operations under previous federal grants, such as the Disability Navigator Initiative, while other sites developed EN operations directly through DEI grant funding and through partnerships with community rehabilitation and perhaps other organizations. That being said, the DEI pilot sites that we'll discuss today developed or expanded EN operations during the period of the Round 1 DEI grant funding, which started here in New York and in other states in the latter part of 2010. So now I'm going to briefly show you a little bit about our process here in New York and how we work the ticket program. So we focused intensely, we certainly did, on the Ticket to Work program over the last 3 years here and in serving beneficiaries. We used an individual assessment process to determine which customers were most work-oriented, I'll say, to the best of our ability. It's not an exact science. And to determine appropriate services our customers would require. This might have led, and often did, to referrals to our primary partner, our state VR program here in New York called Access VR, and to other resources. If the ticket holder did require a level of service our center could provide, well, we'd assign the ticket and work directly with that customer, often utilizing other partner agency resources as a part of their plan. And again, this is part of our one of our strategic service delivery components under DEI we call integrated resource teams that I briefly mentioned, which we found to be effective. Additionally, and I think key to the success with our ticket holders, at least in this state project, was the fact that each of our disability resource coordinators held certification as CWICs, or they had similar certification. They might have had to, based on availability of seating through VCU, use Cornell's process. But all of them were certified and understood the process of helping folks return to work and the impact on benefits. Next slide. So, again, I want to remind you that the stats I'm providing here include two well-established job center pilots, sites which had been operating ENs for many years, actually, here in New York, and expanded their capacity through the DEI grant. Payment outcomes are shown during the period of the grant only, as are the stats for ticket assignments. But as a matter of full disclosure, I do want to say I did my very best not to include or use historical data from these two well-established EN sites. So if we look at our numbers, and I see some great questions in the chat, I'm hoping we get to later. But as a matter of our stats here, we had 407 tickets assigned by the end of our project, which officially was September 30th of last year for round one. We had total estimated revenue of about $450,000 amongst our 13 sites.